Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
All right, we got a lot of stuff going on in the economic world right now, as well as in the sports world.
Oh, yeah.
I think front and center is the NBA playoffs.
Oh, yeah, I want to start with something. Hey, do you think the gambling is making it where the fans think they could challenge the players now? Because like because they say when you walk into the stadium, you take your phone and it go right to the FanDuel or right to the app where you can bet.
Okay.
So imagine watching a game and you're like, yeah, I'm going to bet on Celtics and Nets.
You bet first quarter. You can bet second quarter. Halftime, you can bet throughout the game. How many three-pointers an individual will get. It's just about money.
Yeah, so then you got to think. Money. So look, I'm thinking like this. So like I'm going into a game. So look at all the parameters and the indicators we got. Going to the game, I stop by the dispensary, right?
Right.
Before I go to the game, then I go to the game. They got alcohol beverages there, so I get all of that.
Uh-huh.
And they got the club inside of there. I can get something to eat, so I'm eating. Then I'm like, oh, my phone, ding. You can bet $1, you win this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. The hook. That's the hook. That's to get you
coming. I'm bet $1,000, my team ready.
Right. Yep. You bet the point. The line, you can bet up on the money, you can bet who's going to score so many three-pointers. They're making it easy.
Yeah.
But trust me, FanDuel is paying the NBA a whole bunch of money, just like they're going to do the NFL and everybody else. It's just all about money.
It's going to make up for the what they missed.
Potentially, yes. Yeah.
That's going to be
from
over.
The fan gates, you know, from the walk-in money.
Yes, right.
This is going to make up more for it because I just read the first quarter just in Detroit. The casinos up over there had took in well over $250 million in profit off of their sports betting.
Yeah, and like what be funny to me is, Tony, when I see people betting and I say, oh, they only post their wins.
Look
at my parlay. I thought 10 games. I bet it $15. I made $2,000. I'm like, okay, what about the times you lost? Show me them. Show me those parlays.
Look at here. Las Vegas was not built on people winning a lot of money.
Yeah.
All right.
I know.
You hear about that at one in a million or one in 100 million where a guy go in and he'll lay down, $500,000 and, you know, he gets the payoff.
That's right.
But there's so many others that bet didn't win that it's not a loss for the casino.
Mm. So they sitting there like, I won. Look at this.
Uh-huh.
Like, and then I be thinking, like, when you bet, are you really calling it? Like, are you really smart? You think you're like really a genius, or what is it?
There are professional gamblers, okay? There is a profession. And these guys basically spend their whole life in whatever, you know, they're going to be a professional at something. And it's going to be baseball, football, basketball, where you just break down all the analytics, and you're basically betting on those results. But it's no way that you can walk up to a window and on a whim make a bet on a consistent basis and win. It's not gonna happen.
I remember seeing the movie as a teenager, I watched Casino.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Casino, one of those good movies.
When he was a bookie or a gambler, he said he knew all the girlfriend was acting up, if the turf was wet, if they had a certain kind of spikes on their cleats, if they played with a certain basketball, if the parquet floor was different. He said he really went in like that. So you're telling me it's actually people that's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend I went to college with, man. He's a professional gambler. You know, that's what he does.
Man, they make a good racket. I've seen some guys. But I know some guys that's into that, and they don't. Then one day they up, one day they terribly down.
Yep, that's right. It's still a hard profession to be in, man. It's not consistent at all. You get on a run and you do well. Well, guess what? It's gonna come in reverse too. You're gonna hit a spell where you can't catch none of these games just right.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times on TV they'll show sequences in the game, which say a team was up by 3 points, the spread is only 2. So right now they're up and they commit a foul late in the game and the guy goes to the free throw line, hit both free throws, so now it's a 1-point game and you lost your money because the guy committed a foul. You know, those are the kind
killed
of things
the spread.
That,
yeah. Yeah,
those kind of things that really drive, you know, gamblers crazy.
So then a lot of people now, they are like impulse. Like if they the fan in the stands, they impulse gambling. They,
yes,
they
sir.
There, they caught it. It's my favorite player. It's my favorite team. Bing, I'm going to bet 300, 500.
Yep.
And then now I see them throwing water bottles, spitting, all scrapping, running on the court at the Washington game, trying to fight Bradley Beal.
Right.
I'm like, wow, these people, they not professionals. So they in the perspective of like the anxiety and the like the feelings of the game. They caught up in the feeling and not looking at the analytical of it. So when they betting with house money. They're like,
and they betting with their heart, not the head, right? Okay. So, and when you think about what has transpired recently in the NBA, it just seems so ironic that the players that are being targeted are African-American.
Ah, man.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think some people just feel entitlement that think that since they bought a ticket, that gives them the right to treat these players like they're at the zoo.
Yeah.
You know?
Or I would say this, Tony. And I'm not against. I love the opportunity for kids to be in the gaming, but when a grown man is in the gaming so much that he takes that gaming so serious that he go to the real game, he think he probably got a joystick.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. I've known guys, some guys that I've seen play games all day, every day. If the weekend come, that's what they're gonna do.
Really.
And not look, we're not talking about because they got gaming, they got high school gaming where you can win scholarship money and do stuff like that. They got those things out there, right?
Wow.
We can compete competitively, but I'm talking about just regular playing a game.
They're that consumed with it.
Yeah, so it's like, so imagine being, we in COVID since March 13th last year, right?
Yep.
So imagine no sports, no fans, right? You an avid fan. I'm an avid Pistons fan. I like going to concerts. So when the Pistons get ready, they starting to let people back in. So next season, I'm going to be there at Michigan State. I'm going to be there.
Right.
I'm not a gambler. So I'm like, I'm glad to be back. We tailgate.
For the entertainment.
I'm looking for that. I need that. That's I like that. But then for the person that's like really consumed by it, becomes a religion.
Yeah, and the pandemic basically escalated it because you are confined at home, right?
You talking to the TV. You know, remember those days, right?
Spend all your time.
Oh, you scrub. TV, right? Talking to the TV, right?
Right.
The old flow model. Hey, look at that. Watch him do this. So then now you at the real game. You doing the same. You react the same way. So you haven't disconnected from your virtual world to the actual lived experience.
To reality.
Man.
Yeah, that's a good concept. Yep. So.
And you bet money. And you bet the dispensary. And you had a drink.
You got all the vices going. But the NBA's and they, you know, we're gonna prosecute.
Yes.
We're gonna start putting them in jail.
Where,
see how they like it.
Where is what they call it, Ron Artest?
Oh, Ron Artest. Yeah.
He had a nickname though. Ron when he ready to run into the stands.
Yeah, that was at with Pacers, right?
Where the Steven Pacers Jackson, name? Ron, and Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do this. I've been seeing memes go around. Say, what are these players at? Because somebody made a bet. That is, I can throw and hit him.
Okay.
I can hit Ron Artest when he's on the score table. Say, go ahead. I bet $50. He threw it and he hit him. So Ron, the dude had his hands up. He made the bet, so I knew one of them did something.
See, wrong guy.
See, it was the wrong guy. But he the one made the bet, and the other dude threw it. So he like, I knew you was involved because how you was looking.
Yeah, but Ron Artest was the wrong guy to hit.
That's right.
Because he on the edge all the time anyway.
That's right. And all this, we're not talking about violence. But that happened in 2004.
Yeah.
So you got to look.
20 years ago.
We 21 now. So
it's still happening.
It's still happening. So it's got to be race related. It's got to be.
How many times have you seen players other than African Americans be singled out at a basketball game? I mean, even as far as the other night, they show the spitting incident that happened in the game. John Morant family is at the game in Utah.
They're talking about his family.
In the racial taunts that was thrown at his family.
So what's the majority of that population in Utah? Is it Mormon?
Yes.
Yeah. So they got a
2-3% African Americans.
Yep. And they don't believe in.
And he's from Memphis, but.
Yep. And they don't believe
still.
in that they pure race. Yes. Yeah. I'm not even get, but it's out there. Yeah. I'm not, what I'm gonna say, I am trying to not gonna talk about race. Yes, I am.
Yep.
I have to.
You have to call it like you see it, man.
Yep, you have to call it like you see it. So, you bring it up there, you should be quiet. No, I should not, because we got stuff going on 400 years. We got the Asians getting picked with, African Americans being picked with. Oh, just be quiet about that. No, we tired of it.
Yeah. Anybody throw anything at Larry Bird you know about?
Yep.
John Havlicek.
They're still coming at Isaiah Thomas, Dennis Rodman, if I was telling the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love Larry Bird. I love the way he played.
Me too. Nothing, you know, in the relationship that he has with Magic, you know, it's great.
And he played for one of the racist teams in America. He played for the Celtics.
And that's a very well-known story. Bill Russell.
Oh, he did. He got to
tell you the things that he endured while in Boston.
Man, him and Casey Jones.
Yeah.
Yep. And they were two of the best players.
Yes, they were.
College championship winners, All-Americans.
Yeah, Casey won NBA championship with Boston. Yep. That don't matter, man.
And as a coach. Two as a coach, one as a player.
Yeah.
So you got to think, it don't matter.
It just don't matter.
When you eat this restaurant. I'm NBA champion. So?
Don't matter. Mm-mm. Well, you see what happened to Dominique Wilkins, right?
Recently. In his town.
In Atlanta.
He liked the mayor.
Yeah. The face of Atlanta.
What you doing here? Like, I'm Dominique Wilkins. We don't know.
Well, sorry.
We don't serve your kind here.
We're full.
We don't serve your kind. I got money. We don't serve your kind.
Yeah, your money don't spend here. And, you know, we just went through the anniversary of the Black Wall Street Massacre.
That's 100 years, right?
100 years. And History Channel, CNN have been playing a lot of the, the history behind those. And I would hope that our audience take the time. If, you know, you can go back and watch these on demand.
Yes, sir.
And just look at how prosperous these group of individuals were. And they had their own. They didn't go and try to integrate. They said, okay, you want to segregate it, fine. But we're going to build our own town within this town. And actually what precipitated the riot was just pure jealousy and disdain for what these people had done. And there are mass graves. You know, we talk about what happened in Vietnam and all this about mass graves. Well, we got them right here in this country. The Jews, what the Nazis did to those, the mass grave. We happened right here in this country. And that's something that nobody wants to talk about in this country, about what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. And there are people that are alive today that were children at that time and could tell you the horrors of living through that. It's sad, man. But my hat is off to Biden, because he definitely made an effort to try to show the country that he has compassion for what happened. And that's about all you can do at this point. But yeah, our past presidents have really, in my opinion, never addressed the issue in a way that public knows that that was something that we should be ashamed of as a country.
And we should, because when I think about Oklahoma, I think about plus the Native Americans.
Native Americans, right? Have a very strong presence in the state of Oklahoma.
So they removed them, right? And then you got this African-American population that's living there, right?
Yeah.
It's a great expansion. And they're like, we here. It's nowhere. Oh, they got to leave too. But then when you think about people going to massacre, what's under that land? Oil reserves. There's a lot of millionaires there today.
In Oklahoma? Yeah. Texas,
it's a lot of millionaires and billionaires. It's some billionaires. It's a large per capita. I don't know how they lose their NBA team. I don't know how they lose it, because the Thunder Gym used to be packed every day.
Yeah, it's still there, but, you know, it's not where it used to be, that franchise.
That's right.
It's still in Oklahoma City, but it's not where it used to be.
That's right.
And I went to Oklahoma City. And, you know, the bombing took place there, McVeigh, where he, you know, again, homegrown terrorism.
Yep.
Planted that car bomb in front of the federal building. So Oklahoma sort of have a history of mass killings, if you will. And just never, I think, been put on the type of a format that it should be. That is horrible, what happened.
So when I look at that, Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre, I think about what happened at the White House.
Good analogy again.
Yeah. It's a denial on both sides.
Yeah.
We ain't doing nothing. You got pictures and videos of us running through there. Hey,
yeah.
What you gonna do to Trump? No, he ain't do nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And you can't even get the Republicans to vote against it right now.
You can't get them. They wanted to put together a commission to go in and get to the bottom of what happened at the insurrection, right?
Yes.
But the Republicans don't want it.
Don't want it. So now, let's flash back to 100. Let's go 100 years before.
Okay. What happened? Waiting. What did the federal government do after that massacre?
They gave subsidized housing. You think they gave everybody a check? Like, here go your business again. Here go your barbershop. Here go your auto company. Here go your wash machine company. Here go your check.
Build projects. That's what they did.
They build projects.
Build projects. And we know projects are just short of plantations.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's grew exactly up in a project, and the mindset is, it's rough.
Yeah.
It's hard to think outside of how you can grow.
Yeah. Why not build affordable housing where people can live? Why do we have to be put into projects, right? That's called systemic racism. Okay, that's just a small piece of it that we're still dealing with today.
Man.
So I wanted to touch on that. Didn't really want to get off into the massacre that took place, but it's really something. It's unfortunate that I didn't even know about it because it was never taught in history, right?
Right.
I never heard about the massacre in high school. It was not talked about.
I heard about it in college when I got to college.
Okay.
I had a class called The Ghetto at Michigan State. And I didn't take it by accident. It was a 400 level class, like a senior or master's level class. I took it as a freshman.
Wow.
It was hard. And the professor, his name was Mr. Williams, and he acted just like Lawrence Fishburne did in Higher Learning. So, like, I'm at Michigan State.
Oh, he hard then.
And he like, Mr. Williams. I'm like, I'm looking at him like, he looked like the dude, because that's the same year the movie came out, Higher Learning. So I'm like, I'm in this class. So then what I say to him one day, I said, Uncle Tom to him in class one day, because I was on the project. And he's like, Mr. Williams, let me see you after hours, right? So he was from Pittsburgh, and he broke down what a ghetto really was for me. And I ended up doing really good in that class after that.
Okay.
I went from having a 1 point to like a 2.8 or two, you know, you can get 2.5. But he was proud of me. He said, you confronted me. I had to show you that I'm from ghetto too in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And what he did, all his research was based on how the Industrial Revolution left Pittsburgh and how they left all these ghettos.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, guess what? The whole America's a ghetto.
Yes.
And he showed me ghettos. He even showed me my own community I come from on how it's structured with the highway here,
mm-hmm.
the 131 highway, on how anybody can come in our city, get resources, buy stuff, collect their rent, whatever, and leave.
Yep.
And they don't have to be from here. And they don't have to, the tax is different for them, everything. He was like, look, this is, and this he showed me, this in 1996, spring 1996. And I was just like.
Yeah, we always take things.
He opened my eyes to my own city. Yeah. He's like, he said, you live in a racist city. You from a racist city. I'm like, what do you mean I'm from a racist city?
Come on.
I'm from the Heights. I'm this. He said, you from a racist city. He said, you might have your own people doing something to the people in your city. Benefiting off of them.
And it happened.
He right. And I'm looking back.
It happened.
15 years later, 20 years later, 25 years later, I see what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He was right.
It is. It's so deep that it really almost shocks your consciousness when you really take a deep dive and you look at what's happening around you. And if you just walk through it like it's a fog, you'll never realize all the dynamics of what's happening. But it's all by design.
Yeah, like.
Okay, it just don't happen this way, man. It's by design.
I was, like, in the morning, I wake up every morning, right? Part of my health. I try to go somewhere tranquil. So I go to the beach in the morning, right?
Okay.
So I've been watching the whole development of the beach. I'm like, wow, they did the streets over. Everybody got a driveway now. I'm like, wow, right? And Like, man, I can go to some streets in this neighborhood. Ain't nobody got a driveway and nobody got no curve. They got a straight street laid down. Whether I'm downtown or Heights, a certain neighborhood is never going to get fixed.
Never
going to get fixed. I know that, right?
Not in your lifetime.
Right? So I'm jogging, and I'm jogging, right? I'm jogging every morning. And then when it's time, during this time, I see these signs that say free sand. Like, free sand, free sand. So stay with me, right, audience and Tony. Stay with me. I'm like, free sand. So I'm like, I'm always looking at the MLS and the value of the house. I'm like, oh, this house worth $800,000. This house worth $1 million. This worth $900,000 out there, right?
Right.
Lake Michigan. Yeah. Lake Michigan. Do it every day. And I'm like, free sand. Wow, free sand. And I remember I used to jog in the hood all the time. And I used to be like, oh, okay, this house right here, this abandoned. This vacant. This vacant. This house been vacant 30 years. Or this street been like this forever. Let me watch these piles while I sprain my ankle.
Right? Like that. Yeah.
So I'm like, I look at the fast development that's going on the lakeshore. What are the residual? Who that's going to benefit?
Can you afford to buy out there?
No. I mean, I could if I scrape. I probably can get into a quarter million if I scrape through. I won't be able to get my hook cut or eat a sandwich. But
no.
Yeah. But I can't.
No.
Not right now.
No, that's not considered affordable housing in what we look at it.
Right. So when I'm looking at that, Tony, I'm thinking, I'm like, so, and I'm going back to this free sand thing. I'm like, wow, free sand, free sand. The value of the house is like, nah. But then I go to my community, communities I'm from, and I'm not picking on nobody. Ain't no grass. If it rains, it's flooded. Hmm. And I'm like, it's not the city fault. I'm like, it's not even the city fault. It's the elected officials' fault. It's the people that we appointing and voting for. And we putting them in position. And policy.
Yeah.
Policy is keeping the perfectionism. It's keeping the people that think it's right to take resources and put them in one space.
There you go.
Oh, those people don't deserve that. That group don't deserve this. This zip code don't deserve it. So it's still redlining going on in Muskegon.
Yes, it
right
is.
Now.
It's just gotten a lot more smarter about it. It's not as, it's out there, you know, like we normally, they would just basically come out and say it, okay? But now price is redlining.
Yep, and this is the next problem we're going to have. We're going to have the same problem that Travis City having right now. We've already had this problem. So audience, listen. The B&Bs are about to start popping up in Muskegon where nobody ain't going to have no place to live. Watch.
Tourism.
It's going to be empty condos downtown that nobody's in that they're going to charge. You're going to start looking at the listings. It's going to be $2,000 or it's $500 for one night. And you're like, well, what about why somebody can't live there? Because the question I asked audience was, okay, why is none of the housing set aside for educators, nurses, police officers?
Yeah, our supposedly frontline, right? Our essential workers.
You know what I was told?
Getting benefits.
It's a school issue. How is a school going to run the city?
No, it's not. It's not.
So either I'm watching Muskegon go and tell me a lie, right?
Right.
Or I'm looking at my, because I can't look at the school. I know the people in my school. I can go right and approach. I can approach the superintendent. I can approach the finance department. They'll tell me everything. But I can't approach the city manager. Ask him nothing like that. Ask the city. Ask your school. It's an issue for you. No, it's not. No. School can't control what the city do.
Nope. Cannot.
Building whatever you want to build. So, it's a capitalist society. Things are going to happen, keep on happening to our community, not with our community members. And I was thinking about Grand Rapids, Wealthy Street. I remember Wealthy Street, we used to go over there just to hang out. Now Wealthy look like it's Beverly Hills.
Yeah, Wealthy has turned completely around. It's all restaurants, cafes, shops, boutiques. Rentals are extremely high along that Wealthy corridor because you're headed into East Grand Rapids, which is probably one of the highest per capita places in West Michigan. So, but you're absolutely right.
And okay. I don't know, it's like everybody was giving a stimulus or a little money for they can just go and buy back the block on you and do whatever they want to do and make sure inflation hits so hard that you buy a piece of lumber that you used to build a deck for $300 something, now you got to build it for $3,000.
Right. Yeah.
property values is up 40% on stuff that
ridiculous.
They don't even have to improve. They say, you can buy this for 180. I'm like, hold up. Hey, 6 months ago, that was 80,000.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's happening right before our eyes that some bubble got to bust. Something has to happen because in micro communities like this, you get to see it. Because it's going on everywhere else. Everywhere. It is. Like my professor everywhere. Told me, it's going on. And it's a financial decision. So I'm not going to even be on my high horse no more. I want to get to the Bitcoin. But I just, you know.
Oh, Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah
in the
crypto.
News again.
In the news again. I got this article, Tony, say, I lost millions through cryptocurrency addiction. So no, hold up. He said he ain't addicted to drugs, alcohol, gambling. He said he addicted to crypto. He addicted to something he can't even see.
Can't even see.
So we talking about, is it pornography money? What? That's how you look at it.
It's unregulated.
Yes.
It could be anything.
Wow. Right?
It could be, you know,
pornography money.
It could be terrorist money. You know, it could come in all forms as far as investing in cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I've seen another article where they did a raid. And they raided and they looking for drugs. It was all crypto computers in the basement.
Yeah. It takes a lot of energy
to
run these computers.
They thought somebody running some lights or something for some drugs. And they raided the space. And it's like, oh, there's crypto down here.
Yeah. Yeah. The electric company probably said, man, we got a spot over here in this part of town that's pulling so much energy. It's got to be something.
Or a power outage or something happened. It was like, it's that house right here.
But it's probably 200 computers in there, man. And it's pulling a massive amount of energy to operate. And it's called mining when it comes to these cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
It's called mining.
Just
it takes a lot of energy.
Programming. So let's just say this is anonymous name. It says Jake lost millions of pounds and he's in the UK trading cryptocurrency. He doesn't want his identity known because he is still in treatment at one of the only hospitals in the UK that treats people who are obsessed with gambling on the value of virtual currency.
Virtual.
Man, that sound like a sermon coming. Somebody had to put me back in the pulpit. That sound like a Mark of the Beast, don't it? So you telling me I'm addicted to something I can't even touch.
Right. Can't even touch it. Can't see it.
That's porno money. That's what that is.
Yeah.
It say Jake first bought Bitcoin, the most popular currency, in 2015. But it wasn't until a big win a few years later that his trading spiraled out of control. And this is what he said, Tony. He said, I can pinpoint the exact moment it became a problem, he said. I had been enrolled in the sum I put aside, but I entered a trade and I was willing to risk that last amount I had. I ended up making back pretty much everything I lost in a single trade. The feeling was one of absolute euphoria. There it is.
Okay.
We talked about that with the sports, right?
Yep.
I put $1,000 in, I made $30,000.
Right. Now you keep going, you're going to pay it all back.
But he probably lost more than the $30,000.
Oh, you know that, man. You know, different to people playing the numbers every day.
Man.
Tell you what they hit on.
So look what Jake said. He said he told BBC Scotland's The Nine that his high, coupled with difficulties in his marriage, in his marriage and personal life, quickly led to an addictive cycle. There you go, look. Instead of dealing with issues in your marriage and your personal life, you found another, habit.
It's a habit.
A bad habit.
Yep.
That you could push a button.
Push a button.
Push a button.
Click the mouse, hit the keyboard, whatever that stimulus was.
Yes, sir.
That got him going, ruined him.
Then look, he say, his job at the time meant he was in charge of millions of pounds.
His job,
right? He said as soon as he took to trading money, that was not in the hope of repeating his first success. He said, the first time I took it, I lost all in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
One night. The market moved very rapidly, and I liquidated everything. So then look, look what time it was. Listen, it was about 2 a.m. I went back to bed and I just lay down next to my wife. She had no idea what I had been up to. His head was hurting.
How you tell him we're going to be homeless? We have no money.
My hair hurt. Let me lay down. Jake had been facing criminal charges for embezzlement, but was able to pay back, well, here you go, 1.5 million francs.
That's what they got, right?
Yeah.
That's how much America, probably 2-3 million?
Yeah, yeah, depending on, you know, currency trading has been around for the longest, right? So that's no real big deal, but now we're dealing with a virtual currency that doesn't have any benchmark.
No, look, he said he paid it back to his employer with the help of his family. They rich, his family, yeah,
family
rich.
Family has some money, right.
And now he's in treatment for his addiction. So he didn't go to prison or nothing.
Well, come on, man. They don't go to prison unless you're Bernie Madoff.
Okay.
You take billions.
Wow. So listen up. Listen. Cryptocurrencies are digital money that is not issued by a bank. And you told me this like 5 years ago. I haven't touched it because of you. I'm like, look, I'm going to trust what Tony said. I'm glad I did. You can trade and invest these currencies like any other. And there are virtually no barriers to entry.
Nope.
The absence of regulation means that the market can go up incredibly fast.
And down.
During the lockdown, the total value of all cryptocurrencies increased from about 175 billion francs to 1.75 trillion.
That's a lot. That's a lot of money.
Figures from the UK financial watchdog show that hundreds of thousands of people in the UK hold these digital currencies. But since the start of May, the market reached its highest level and lost more than 1 trillion. Just a few weeks later. That loss almost only got 1 trillion. That's 0.75 trillion left.
That's a lot of money, man.
That's more than half. That's lost 85%. With something this volatile, when you win, you win big. When you lose, you hit rock bottom.
You never hear about them cashing out, walking away with your winnings. Riding off in the sunset.
Look, he say, the crack cocaine and gambling.
That's exactly what it is.
That's what it is. I'm high.
Yeah.
I'm low.
Pork high, man. He said it. He got in the pork high off of gambling. He made all that money.
Wow. Here's another example. Like, it's a girl, right? She said, you carry horrendous guilt. She said, my friends and my family invested. She said, collectively, our total loss has so far been 250,000 euros.
That'll wipe you out, man.
I'm not laughing. I've been in financial straits before. I've been in situations. But I haven't been in a situation because it was a push of a button.
No.
I've been in because of the mortgage crisis. I've been through that. But I'm not going to let some virtual world take me for a spin. Mm-hmm.
It's like fool's gold, man.
Yeah.
You know, I still believe in the dollar. All right? If I can't go to the local supermarket and spend it, it has no value to me.
Then look, it say this. The technology that enables cryptocurrency is notoriously complicated.
Yeah.
And if you are not careful, you could easily find yourself invested in a scam.
That's the other danger of cryptocurrency.
Ah, they got me, Tony.
So, who do you go to? Who do you call when you just got scammed in a cryptocurrency fiasco? Who do you call?
Man.
The SEC's not coming. The federal government's not coming.
My advisor.
It's not regulated.
I met my advisor on Facebook. He inboxed me. My Bitcoin consultant inboxed me. He in Canada.
Yeah.
In Toronto.
Yeah. I had a lady come in the office yesterday talking about these people that they spend their time on the phone. You've just won clearinghouse $1 million cash prize. In order for us to send you the money, we need you to go buy $5,000 worth of these cards. You go to Kmart, you go to Walmart, you know, any of these stores that carry these cards, right? And people do it.
Put the money on the card.
Put it on the card.
Give them the number.
Give them the numbers.
So they think, they say, okay, I'm going to give you a deposit. And they give you a deposit of a dollar or something. All right, then tomorrow all of it's going
to
be there.
Yeah, see, in order for us to process this, it takes this much money from you. Then we'll start, you know, we'll send you the check, a cashier's check, in the amount.
It's fake
there
check.
Are people that
fake
fall
check.
For it.
Fake
yeah.
check.
I if had you a, get a check.
I had a client, this was a long time ago, that had something like that happen to him, right? And they sent him a check for $10,000, I remember. And the bank was like, this check ain't real.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, they got me for $2,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, there are so many scams out here.
Man.
Blow your mind.
Audience, I'm not laughing. I'm just flashing back. Now, sometimes when you grow up in a trauma-filled environment in a hood, sometimes you got to laugh when the pressure for real.
Yeah.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
So I laugh because I know the toxic and I know the trauma. I know the game when it's coming. So
right.
I'm not laughing at somebody. I'm just doing it to be like, woo. I can flash back in my own mind and remember situations that I know people or it happened to me. And I say, shame not on me again.
Nope. You just cannot be that gullible. If it sounds too good to be true.
Leave it alone.
It is probably not true. If it sounds too good to be true, walk away.
No, you don't know what you're talking about. They tell me I get them $500, I can make $90,000.
Yeah. Yeah. You just won the clearing house, $1 million. Don't buy it. No.
So, audience, please stay away. And what they call it again? They call it the crack cocaine.
A virtual currency.
Of gambling. And then she said.
Yeah, it's a form of gambling, basically all it is, man.
I carry not guilt, horrendous guilt.
Yep.
Here, listen to this. Last quote, and we're going to get off air. There are so many people out there that are trading cryptocurrency that they are making money, right? That's the trick.
That's what they say.
And they're telling everyone that they're making money. We are not hearing from the people that are losing money.
Yeah.
So you know what it is? On one end, it's a pot that people losing. And I can tell you about the word shame. I ain't going to post what I'm losing.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah. Army got a commercial, Tony. And I see it because I watch everything through the internet, right? So I'm watching on TV. It always come on. NBA. It'd be a dude walking down the street like he took. And then it's the same person come up. It's him. But he got the internet. He got like all his Facebook and TikTok like he happy. And then the dude that's walking the real him, he just punched the dude like boom. It's like, uh-huh. Out my face. And then Army him show up like, get some real friends.
Oh.
Get out the virtual world. Do what you're supposed to do.
Okay,
and I was like, man, I love that commercial. Every time I say, I've been trying to search it on YouTube, but audience, that's the reality. Find the reality in everything you're doing.
Yes, sir.
Because you could be tricked. I'm Chauncey Williams.
I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.